the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now. Well, clearly, the world of car retail, automobile retail, is ever evolving. So we're delighted on this particular edition of Business Matters to feature a true success story, a person who actually started his own particular car cleaning business at the age of 12, was actually dealing with Manchester United cars in the 1970s, is now the chief executive, of course, and general wonder behind Thirlby Motors in Louth. We welcome Richard Walsh to the programme. How are you, Richard?
Fine, thank you, Alex. Good morning.
Well, it's great to connect with you, good self. Of course, you're managing director of Thirlby Motors. And before we go into delve into your own background, would you like to just share a little bit about Louth's finest car dealership in terms of how long you've actually been there and so on? Because, again, it is in itself another success story.
Been at Thirlby Motors for 42 years, bought it back in 1981. That was with the help of General Motors. It was a scheme that they introduced, and we were the first, this was GM in America, and we were the first people actually to get on the scheme. And General Motors picked out a dealership in Lincolnshire. We were over in the Northwest, and me and my partner, myself, Hilton Goddard, we came over and set ourselves up here. And the idea was to pay General Motors off over 15 years, and we did it in about 5 years. So it was very good.
As I said, a true success story. But let's dial back a little bit and go into the Richard Walsh roots and so on. you obviously have a passion for cars, but was that driven by your toy collection as a child, or was that something else that you sort of thought, oh, no, Corgi have a lot to answer for?
I think Corgi have a lot to answer for. Toy collections, really, Alex. I always remember a mother taking me to primary school with a son, and his father owned a garage in Rochdale. And I used to thought, God, I wish my father owned a garage. I'd love to. That was my ultimate dream right from the sort of age of sort of eight, to own a garage. So I fulfilled that.
You may just remember a regular, I think it was a comic magazine / newspaper called TV21, which always used to have Corgi Model Club news. Actually, as a sort of half a page was devoted to that. So that was and my rationale. But you're probably too young to
Yes.
remember that, actually, Robert, Richard, in anyways.
Yeah.
But fascinating times. And of course, proving that entrepreneurship knows no barriers when it comes to age. You started a car cleaning business at the age of 12. Was that for extra pocket money, or did you have
It
a
was,
business
yes.
vision
I
in
used to
mind?
play golf, and they didn't allow juniors to play at certain times of the weekend. So I decided I'd start to wash members' cars off. And it was a typical working class golf club in Manchester. But a couple of Manchester United players used to play there who then played for England. And quite interestingly for everybody, really, the cars that they were given were Ford Cortinas, which was equivalent to a Ford Focus now. And if you look at footballers in these £300,000 Lamborghinis, it's quite a bit different to what it is now.
Yes, I have to say, Richard, although we'll obviously share this, I was a main road regular back in those days. So a different club in Manchester and kind of different
Absolutely,
areas.
yes.
But
Absolutely,
I won't mention Dennis Law's back heel, but that's a different line entirely from today.
yes.
Okay, so I mean, we're going to sort of feature a variety of music, of course, in terms of this. And first up, slight change. I know you asked for the London Philharmonic Orchestra, but we've got the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by
Oh,
Herbert
that's
von Karajan.
okay.
Hall of the Mountain King. Is this the kind of tune you'd like to
The
just.
reason for that, Alice, was when I was at primary school, it was in near Manchester, and it was decided there was going to be a school trip to see the Hallé Orchestra. And an 8-year-old young boy thought, oh no, I don't fancy going to see an orchestra. But actually, it was awe-inspiring. It was fantastic spectacle to see a live symphony orchestra. And one of the symphonies they played was Hall of the Mountain King. So yes, it stuck with me for the rest of my life because you can see my music tastes aren't really very much classical music, but I think ones like that are superb, really, as a spectacle.
You're listening to Business Matters on Siren Radio. We're speaking to the managing director of Thirlby Motors, Richard Walsh, and Hall of the Mountain King. We've just heard, of course, Richard. That could be something which, in essence, you could play to welcome prospective customers to give them a sense of awe, a sense of the dramatic, a sense
Yes,
of
absolutely,
walking through
Alex.
the
Yes,
showroom.
yeah. Before they hand their money over.
Exactly. Now, in terms of the business of car dealerships, I mean, obviously there are a number of reputable companies, of which Thirlby Motors is very much at the heart of that side of things there. But there are folk who will say, ah, yes, but it's a bit like Arthur Daly, isn't it? Or it's going through all sorts of other things. And of course, these days we have the notion with various companies where you don't even have to go into a showroom. You just click, 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 and get your car from that point of view. So as we've kind of developed that, is that something which There is something special about actually speaking to a car dealership where clearly the sales staff actually know their business. They know basically the ideas, what people are looking for, whether you're looking for a high-end luxury market, whether you're looking for a reliable vehicle from that point of view. And certainly in Louth, given its rural background as well, presumably that's an essential part of the whole car purchasing experience.
Very much so, Alex. It's the ultimate question is why, what, when, how, and who. You have to ask the customer to get them into the right car that they want. There's so many people that will probably choose a car first time and it won't be the right car. It's just people try, say, if they're going from a saloon car to an SUV and not just go 5 minutes round the block, go out in it for a half an hour to get used to it, to get used to the height and how it handles and everything. And more importantly, is you've got to look after your customers. It isn't just about buying the car, it's about looking after the customer and the car afterwards. That is so important, because if you look after the customer, he will tell his friends and that goes on and it goes on like that. And we get customers. Well, I've got customers in France, we've got customers in Cornwall, because if they have a problem with the car, we go out and deal with it no matter where they are. And that is so important, because you want that repeat customer. And some of my customers have been with me 40 odd years. The guy I sold my house to in Manchester comes over to Lincolnshire with his car to get it serviced, and he's been doing it for 42 years. So that just shows, the customer loyalty, but how you've got to keep that customer loyalty, how important this is.
I mean, you raise such a vital part there, Richard, which sometimes I feel gets lost in this hypertext driven world in which we live, that sense of customer care. The fact that survey after survey says that businesses actually spend far less if they actually keep their existing customer base happy than if they're constantly chasing the new customers. And it seems certainly in other industries that it's constantly the incentives for new customers, but that kind of switch is not there. And after customer care, almost seems to have been a heading to extinction, really. But you've just demonstrated just how important it can be.
Very much so. And the advent of car supermarkets as well. You see, a car supermarket, they originally evolved by selling cars under 3 years old, which were technically under manufacturer's warranty. So they sold the car to the customer. The customer came back with a fault. So the car supermarket would say, well, if you go to, the Ford garage, he will sort it out. It's under warranty. So he had no sort of aftercare to deal with at all. And hence they sort of sold the cars cheaper because there was no aftercare that they had to give. So predominantly the cars at a car supermarket always look cheaper. But in actual fact, you're getting no customer care and it's just dropped off. And now, of course, with the advent of COVID, there aren't any of these under 3-year-old cars. So the car supermarkets are now having to sell older cars, having to take on workshops and body shops to prepare the cars. And all of a sudden, you see the massive losses that they're making.
We're going to return to the future of the car industry later in this particular piece, but I was intrigued to see that you're very much ahead of the game when it came to equal opportunities and diversity, etc. Because in the 1990s, you recruited a fair number of female staff, not just for admin roles, but also service managers, technicians, and sales executives. I mean, for a northern car company to actually do that must have been pretty radical at the time, I would have thought.
It was pretty radical, but it was, it, you know, it, it's worked. It's been a great investment. Unfortunately, people move on and get, improve their life. Naomi, who was the apprentice female technician, she's moved on and doing greater things. You can't keep them all, but certainly female service managers were very important to us. How they dealt with the customers used to like it. And salespeople, great, because we catered for everybody then, because there was always a thing, a female was a bit overawed by coming into this male-dominated environment, and they came to Thirlby Motors and they were probably surrounded by more females at certain sites. So, it worked really well for us, very well.
The motorist seems to be under constant attack from a variety of sources, not least of which tends to be international government and so on, in terms of one's almost meant to feel as though you are a pariah if you actually are driving across the country. I mean, I personally actually usually clock up around about 250 miles a week because I travel up from Teesside and down to Lincoln and back again, obviously, off of you, not on a daily basis. But in terms of that, do you feel as though this shift, and I was speaking just a few days ago with the motoring expert Quentin Wilson, who is a self admitted advocate for e-vehicles, is pushing very strongly for e-vehicles. Fiat Motors have obviously started pushing for the governments to reintroduce their subsidy on that. I mean, I did point out that there are a number of us, thankfully I avoided this, who were burned fairly badly by the push to go for the diesel option at the start of the century. And people said, oh, you'd be good for the environment, go for diesel, etc. So in the country in particular, or in the countryside, in the rural environment, are electric vehicles really fit for purpose, or is there still a certain reticence? Is it a case of when it comes to EVs in general? Well, we don't know, is the short answer.
There's definitely a reticence towards them. We were one of the first in the country because obviously we had a Nissan dealership and sold the Nissan Leaf, which I have to be honest with you, Alex, was absolutely appalling. The car, the range on the car was never what they advertised it to be. And we had so much problems with customers complaining, even writing to the MPs, because the range on the car was probably 60 to 70 miles, which was absolutely ridiculous in Lincolnshire. That meant you couldn't go from Louth to Lincoln and back in the day without having to charge it up. And then there weren't any charging points. And I have to say, at that time, we lost a fortune on electric vehicles. They were too expensive and there weren't any charging points. Now, as time progressed, unfortunately, Boris, in his wisdom, decided to bring this 2030 thing in without thinking about it. And we hadn't the infrastructure to cope with it. So all the car manufacturers turned to electric, making electric cars that are, the majority of them are too expensive compared with the equivalent internal combustion engine car. And, there is this reticence because, the cars are far too dear and, we haven't got the infrastructure to cope with it. For instance, if you buy an electric car today, say an expensive one at 70 or 80,000 pounds, you will lose 50% of it in the first year straight away. That is taken off the car. A few years ago, we spoke to the Chinese managing director of MG, and he said that the UK hadn't got the infrastructure for it. China was working on it themselves and building electric cars. And he said, come 2024, there will be a huge influx of Chinese cars coming into the UK. Well, as you can see, it's starting to happen now. And these cars will be substantially cheaper than the equivalent European one. At the moment, a Vauxhall Corsa is 30 odd thousand pounds. Well, that's ridiculous for an electric car. The buying public can't afford it. They can if you have a company because of the company car tax. It's a huge saving. So, there is a big take up of brand new electric cars with companies, but there isn't the take up on secondhand ones. And until we build this infrastructure, especially in Lincolnshire, charging points and everything, and get the charging points to have to pay with one card instead of getting different apps for different charging points. You can have 10 different apps for the different charging points. And, it's crazy at the moment.
It's interesting you mentioned, of course, the depreciation. I know the accepted wisdom was if you purchased a new car, then when you drove it off the forecourt, it would depreciate by about 10%. But there's a difference between 10% and 50%. That is quite
Absolutely,
frightening in all sorts of ways. It's enough to keep you awake at night, which is pretty much why we're moving on to Insomnia by Faithless, your next choice. Any reasons for this? Is it just a case of fear of electric cars?
Yes. The music was very good, but the guy, he's unfortunately he died not so long ago, was called Maxi Jazz, and he was an excellent sort of artist. But I likened him because, in actual fact, he went into motorsport and did the Porsche GT3 championship, which was excellent. So I've always admired him for that.
Thank you.
night when I search for the light. Pick up my pen and start to write. I struggle to fight dark forces in the clear moonlight without fear. Insomnia. I can't get no sleep. Insomnia, please release me and let me dream of making mad love to my girl on the heath, tearing off tights with my teeth. But there's no release, no peace. I toss and turn without cease, like a curse. Open my eyes and rise like yeast. At least a couple of weeks since I last slept, kept taking sleepers. But now I keep myself pep. Deeper still, the night I write by candlelight, I find insight, fundamental movement. So when it's black, this insomniac, take an original tack. Keep the beast in my nature under ceaseless attack. I get no sleep. I can't get no sleep.
Listening to Business Matters on Siren Radio. We have Richard, I'll get the name sorted out. Richard Walsh. I should have said Paul Walsh, obviously, but he again played for Luton Town and Manchester City. So there we are. No relation, I presume, Richard.
Sorry, Matt.
No relation to Paul Walsh.
No, not at all. No.
That's all right. Just wanted to grab that. Anyway, Richard Walsh, Managing Director of Thirlby Motors. And we're discussing about the car industry and so on. Automated cars, driverless cars, those things which we are effectively faced with that might be licensed again by the mythical year of 2030 or indeed 2035, etc. Is that something you've been looking at, or is it a case of, well, we'll just take each innovation as it comes?
I think we'll take each innovation as it comes. I mean, I have a car at the moment that is virtually, it can be driverless. I just have to keep touching the steering wheel. And it's not a Tesla, by the way. I don't like Teslas. But it will eventually come, I think. But I don't think in the sort of, certainly not in the next 5 years. I think before it's fully developed, it's going to be 10 years, I would think. I think still looking at 2035 properly for a proper driverless car system. There will be pockets of it in various cities, I think. But I don't see it on a full-time basis.
Mm-hmm. We've spoken about, obviously, the fabulous work that Thirlby Motors actually does. What about the car industry in general? I mean, we talked a little bit about some of the offshoots and obviously talked about e-vehicles. I mean, the Formula E is something which seems to be growing in popularity over the last decade, as opposed to Formula One and other motorsport scenarios. If you had the opportunity to advise, and we're giving you the opportunity now to basically advise maybe an undergraduate, maybe a student, maybe somebody who's maybe a parent or somebody who kind of has a son or daughter who quite fancies doing something in the car industry, would you say stay away, go into something safe and secure like acting, or would you actually choose something completely different?
I think the beauty of the car industry, Alex, is you can come in with qualifications or you can come in with no qualifications and you can move up to any level. Particularly, say in sales, certainly. Obviously, in the more the technical side, you obviously need the training in learning about the technical side of cars, but certainly the sales side and the management side of it, no. And it is a well-paid industry, and it is a very, very progressive industry, and it's a good industry because you're dealing with people all the time, and so which is fantastic because you meet all walks of life. So I have nothing but praise for the car industry. I mean, my parents were horrified when I sort of said I want to be a car salesman, and they were expecting me to do accountancy exams and go to university. But no, I chose this path and I've never looked back.
And what are your thoughts on the current generation of young car owners? Do you sometimes shake your head in despair, or do you think actually there have always been that kind of variety of some folk who actually want to have, snazzy, zippy cars, etc., some want sort of standard cars, etc.? Is that still pretty much constant in terms of the kind of profile of customer that you're seeing?
I think the younger generation getting into motor cars is diminishing because insurance is becoming dearer. Younger people living in cities, they don't need a car. So we are finding there's definitely a lesser trend of people wanting to learn to drive than there probably was 10, 20 years ago. Everybody will need the car, but I think there is the people in the city will probably just hire a car to go and see the parents at weekends and things and various places like that.
I was going to mention the car hire market because, again, that's something else which has been put forward as a possible solution that you spend much time in terms of car hires. And yet, there's something kind of almost a rite of passage about your first car that you own, that you purchased, and so on. I mean, is it just me waxing nostalgic about the past where you sort of think, I mean, I still remember the Datsun Sunny. That was a car that I had great store by basically from that point of view, and now here I
Yeah.
am with that with very, very happy with a Kia Picanto, which is working and reasonably friendly to the environment, etc. Is that something again that's the shifting? How do you feel about that, Richard? Do you think is there well again? Henry Ford probably had this in mind when he first came up with a design for the electric vehicle back in the day.
Probably so, yes. And funny enough, one of the Autocars, which is a quite a good magazine, top writers, they took a little Kia Picanto around Southern Ireland and they said it was one of the best cars he ever had for taking around. A small car could park anywhere, did everything that a larger car would do. So, cars, yes, we have all of a sudden we've suddenly gone to big SUVs, these bigger cars. But really, when we're going into cities, the small parking spaces are getting smaller. I think, there will be a trend to go for the smaller cars and everything. And, if you're commuting to the city every day and you're doing sort of 25 miles there and 25 miles back, an electric car would be superb. It's just when you're going to do a long distance, you want to go to Cornwall for your holiday. And that's where it's the distance thing with electric cars, but certainly for smaller commutes, without a doubt.
And I have to say, Richard, again, mini confession time, that I used to be a huge fan of the MG Rover, but sadly the head gaskets basically were the regular challenge with
Yes,
respect to those.
well, yeah.
And it was so ironic that the company finally went into liquidation just as I believe they'd actually solved that problem. But still, there we are. That moved me
Yes.
into the Volkswagen Urban Fox, and from then to the Kia Picanto. But there you go.
Yeah.
Moving on, what would the young what advice would you give the young Richard Walsh? That 12-year-old entrepreneur to get some sort of finance for his golf, was setting up his own business, etc. What advice would you actually share with him back in the 20th century?
I think have a vision and focus on your vision. I think whatever you do in life, you want to do it and enjoy doing it. I still enjoy what I'm doing now. I don't wake up in the morning and think, oh, I've got to go to work. No, I enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy cars. And that's, you know, it is the key thing, enjoy, because you've got to enjoy life. And that's, you know, how I sort of see things. I always remember back in the 80s, Alex, Thirlby Motors was in a little hamlet called Thirlby. There were only three houses and the garage there. And I used to think I had a card system, and I wanted a system that where I could look at a customer's registration number and think I know that customer's name. And opposite was a young boy who was about 15 who had a BBC computer. So I went and saw Neil, typical Lincolnshire quiet lad, lived in his bedroom because that's he loved computers. It was the advent of computers. So I said, Neil, could you set this up? And he did do. And he went to the comprehensive in Alford. Neil is now a director of Microsoft, works under Bill Gates in America. And that just shows no matter, he had a vision, he enjoyed what he did, and that's what he did. And you know, yeah, and there it is. So a similar thing, really.
And are you still drawn to the Red Devils from Old Trafford, or have you actually given that up and
Oh
said?
no, I'm not. I follow them, and you know, I'm not a great football fan, Alex. I'm more into motorsport than that. But they paid me well for cleaning the cars, let's say
Exactly. Well, that's fair enough.
that.
That's very important.
Yeah.
Let's talk motorsports. Do you think it's in a healthy state now? I mean, we seem to obviously be addressing the notion of post Lewis Hamilton into obviously Max Verstappen, etc. Or do you feel as though they're still finding their way, shall we say? I mean, again, the days of James Hunt, shall we say, and other folk who used to very much epitomize the glamour of motorsports. You could even say Nigel Mansell to a greater or lesser degree. How do you feel the shape is for the motorsport industry?
I think the Nigel Mansells and James Hunts were the stars, and now we class people stars as superstars because they earn so much. And I think Formula One has just become so big, and it's a billion-pound business. It's just massive. You know, when you look at the numbers they pay, I suppose just like football, it's all down to television and entertainment. And it's become so expensive. You know, I myself was into rallying. If I wanted to do now the World Rally Championship and hire a car, it would cost me for a season 8 to 10 million pounds. So how is a youngster ever going to get on that ladder unless he's got very wealthy parents? Lewis Hamilton was very lucky. He had a hard-working father who put everything into, you know, getting him into motorsport. But the majority now are funded by wealthy parents or wealthy backers, not necessarily talent. They have got to be talented, but that's the only way to get in. It is so expensive.
Much of your musical choices, with the exception, of course, of Follow the Mountain King, have been from the 20th century or earlier. We're moving into the 21st century now with your penultimate track, Tom Adele and Another Love. Is there another love? I mean, are you going to sort of reveal that actually, yeah, I'm giving up motorsports, so I'm going into extreme sports and hang gliding?
No, I'm not quite going to do that, not at my age, Alex. No. I
Never
think
too
Tom
late, Richard.
Odell
Never
just
too late.
epitomizes the 21st century, really. It's sort of a melodic ballad, but it's played in clubs and it's played at weddings and everything, and it's you know, and the young people sing to it. So yeah, it's just a tune that I aspire to, really.
I wanna take you somewhere, so you know I care. But it's so cold and I don't know where. I brought you daffodils on a pretty string, but they won't flower like they did last spring. And I wanna kiss you, make you feel alright. I'm just so tired to share my nights. I wanna cry and I wanna love, but all my tears have been used up on another love, another love. All my tears have been used up on another love, all my tears have been used up on another love. burden of a love. All my tears have been used all.
Clearly, the business of automobile sales continues to develop. We've shared a number of your thoughts, Richard, and we're very grateful for that on this particular program. Do you feel that the car industry will be around in 100 years from now? I mean, in terms of that, or will it be a case of we'll have rentals, we'll have driverless cars and so on and so forth? And that very essential part of the process in terms of customer care that Thirlby Motors clearly rightly respected and renowned for, that might fade into the distance in the same way as, again, times past. You may just remember, I often sort of test people's line, can you remember? I just have a not fading memory, but I do remember quite clearly, you go into a petrol forecourt and somebody would actually fill up the tank for you. They'd actually come out, physically actually do the whole system, and you'd have that customer care as opposed to having to deal with a kind of totally automated credit card service or other things. Do you think that things will change, or do you think as though these are fashions that come around in cycles?
I think things will change. I think I remember the sort of early 90s. We were the first people to start selling mobile phones for cars and everything. And I remember our IT guy saying to Steve, could we use a mobile phone actually, Steve, to pay for everything? So when we go to the petrol pumps, we can use it as almost like a wallet. Would that work? Well, I don't know whether it would work or not. Technically, we could do it. Look at us now. That is it. This is our wallet. It is our everything, mobile phone. So I think cars will eventually will become the mobile phone, basically. There will be a throwaway thing. There will be driverless. There will be fully automated, you know, in the next 100 years. Yes, definitely, without a doubt.
Although, arguably, if they become a totally throwaway, they'll do even more damage to the environment in terms of where they're going to be stored. And we still haven't spoken about what happens to batteries when they effectively sort of reach the end of their life cycle. But that's for another time. A final sort of fairly heavy question, but one which I think probably needs to be asked. We mentioned Boris Johnson earlier. Do you feel Brexit has been good or bad for Thirlby Motors?
Or- I think, as far as the car industry is concerned, Brexit has not helped at all. I think the cars have got dearer. I think, without a doubt, supply of parts and everything has become increasingly difficult, and also the costs. I think Brexit's caused a lot of unknown costs that we weren't sort of told about, or we weren't warned about. I mean, the main thing I
Are you
always thought of
suggesting,
being.
Richard, that politicians have lied to us? Surely not.
Yeah, well, certainly in Lincolnshire, the main thing with our customers, we're sort of Middle England, and the thing that they wanted Brexit for was to get out of European bureaucracy. It was the main thing that, but it hasn't worked that way. It strangled us with basically. We can't travel abroad as we used to do. We haven't the freedom of travel. So it has had a fairly negative effect, really.
Indeed, but as long as obviously we've got the spirit of entrepreneurship as you've demonstrated today, Richard, hopefully we'll be okay. Thirlby Motors, of course, you can reach via thirlbymotors.com. Of course, I'm intrigued actually by the strap line, get that Thirlby feeling. Is that all to do with the after sales care and other bits and pieces, or is it literally something
Absolutely,
which is
yes.
tangible?
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's been a very eclectic range of music. I'm not really shared with us because clearly Faithless and the one we're going to go out with, Fatboy Slim, right here, right now, very much from the kind of rave market. Were you ever a raver, Richard, or was that a case of.
Well, I have six children. I always promised my daughters I'd take them to Ibiza, and it never came off. So I've grown up with this music. This particular track, I always remember it because Vauxhalls that we sold had a very successful car called the Cavalier. In the mid 90s, late 90s, they changed it to the Vauxhall Vectra. The reason for that was I was on a future product committee of GM in Europe, and apparently Vauxhalls wanted the next car, the replacement car, which was a Vectra, to be a hatchback as well as a saloon. The Germans who created the car said, no, we don't want a hatchback, we want a saloon. So Vauxhall said, well, we'll go with the name Vectra if you produce it as a hatchback. So that's what they did. And I always remember listening to Top Gear, and they introduced the Vectra to this tune right here, right now.
Well, it's
And it
going
was
to come.
never as good as the Cavalier, unfortunately.
Right. I mean, the other line, of course, with all of the musical choices is ideal driving music. Even arguably Tom Odell and Another Love, you can actually use it to listen to whilst you're, I don't know, waiting in some traffic
Well,
jam
I have a
somewhere.
50-mile commute to work, you see, so I do listen to all that music and everything.
Absolutely. Richard, it's been terrific sharing some thoughts with your good self. We've got two final questions to wrap up with before we go up to, with Fatboy Slim and right here, right now. First of all, have you enjoyed your time on your debut for the program that we call Business Matters? Has it been good for you?
Very much so, yes. And as we spoke before, Alex, I would like to do a lot more with you and with the university to encourage youngsters to, look at the motor industry basically and do things with them.
Well, Richard, we shall certainly be hopefully forwarding contact details and various other bits and pieces from that. I take it then you'd be kind enough to return and who knows, maybe even turn up into our studio in the not too distant future.
Yeah, that'd be very nice. Yeah, thank you very much.
Richard Walsh, Managing Director of Thirlby Motors, huge thanks. Ever thought of using Fatboy Slim's Right Here, Right Now as a kind of strap line as opposed to getting that Thirlby feeling? Or is it a case of we just don't know what Norman would charge for that particular line?
It's the performing rights on those, so that's the problem.
Well, we'll play it now on Siren
Okay.
Radio. Take care now.
Thank you, Alex.
BCN. Who's this?
Hey, this is Brad. This is Brad.
Now, who's your favorite artist? Who do you want to hear?
Well, my favorite artist right now is Fatboy Slim. That guy kicks ass.
How tremendous is Fatboy Slim?
The band of the 90s, if you want to call it a band, because it's a one-man name.
Wow. Fat Boy, and you want to hear that new Fat Boy song?
Absolutely.
Which one?
The Funk Soul Brother. Check it out.
Sing it. I don't know which one.
Right about now. The Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother.
Indeterminacy. A word possibly you don't hear that often these days, but kind in the whole notion of communicating in the public sphere when you've got two different views, two different viewpoints, electric vehicles or no electric vehicles, being in the fast lane, being in the slow lane, it's all indeterminate. Or is it? Well, our next guest is going to actually address that and come out very solidly from the perspective of being an EV champion. Yes, an electric vehicle champion extraordinaire. It is indeed our ace motoring journalist, the one and only Quentin Wilson. How are you, Quentin?
I'm fine, Alex. How are you?
I'm fine. Yet to actually go electric, but at the same time, I'm still quite happy with my Kia Picanto. Thank you very much. Low emissions and so on. But from your perspective, we're really here to talk about Fiat, who are campaigning very vigorously to actually ensure that the government will reinstate its UK electric vehicle grant. Presumably you would say, well, it's a no-brainer. If you want people to actually move to electric vehicles, you've got to give them some incentive.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And Fiat are being really brave. This is their second year of doing this, of providing their own e-grant, which is £3,000 off the price of a 500e electric convertible Arbath or the new 600e. And that brings the kind of average price of their electric cars down to 25 grand, which is half the national average. So they're doing their bit and they're saying to government, look, we're doing this. We're trying to give consumers a leg up in this really difficult financial time. We're in a recession. We'd like you to reinstate the grant. And they're not the only one. I mean, I've been saying this for a long time. So has the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders and Autocar and Auto Trader and the RAC. Because, look, we are in, you know, a fairly difficult economic time and all big ticket items for consumers are now a really hard thing to do. So we need a little bit of help, and we need to reinstate this grant, because if you look at, you know, Europe, they're giving, you know, significant subsidies away. Cyprus, you get €12,000 subsidy on an electric car. Greece, 8,000. Hungary, 7,500. Even Estonia is giving €5,000 off an electric car, and here are we, right at the bottom of the table, hardly giving anything. So it's something everybody else has seen is the right thing to do. Why are we dragging our feet here in the UK?
I suppose strategically you could always take a trip to Estonia, purchase your car there, and then move back to the UK, although perhaps that's a bit of, that would actually be robbing Peter to pay Paul and wouldn't in the end work out being financially viable. Look, we clearly may well be faced with a change of government in the next 12 months. Might it not be in Fiat's mantra to possibly just hold back and say, we'll wait until we get a more sympathetic ear? Or is it a case of, no, Jeremy and Rishi will be on our side. We know. We just need to keep the pressure on.
Look, I don't want to get political here, but I mean, you know, we've got a budget coming up at March 6th. So this is a big symbolic gesture and it gets the narrative up there. And people talk about it as we're doing today. So I think it's really quite clever. If there is a change of government, I think things will be different. And I think the priorities that Labour have discussed, certainly with me, are different to the Conservatives. But let's not go down that road right now. Let's wait and see if there is a big change. But broadly, you know, we have to do this to protect our auto industry, to give consumers a leg up in a very difficult time, and just to help this really important social change of having cleaner air, less reliance on expensive imported fuel, petrol and diesel from foreign regimes, and get towards that beatific vision of renewable energy stored in batteries that eventually powers our towns, cities and our houses, and we're all off grid. And that's cheaper energy for all. And this is where the electric car is the center of all this, because those batteries are where all the research and development happens, and we will see a time when we get solid state batteries, which are going to be much more efficient and maybe do, you know, a million miles and are faster to charge, and all this sort of technology which is coming, and the days of relying on fossil fuels and building combustion engines and then wearing them out and rebuilding them. This is sunrise industry. It's got to change. We've got to move with the rest of the world, and Europe's doing the same thing, and America and China, and do this. It's really, really important.
For those motorists who were badly burned by the diesel scenario, in which clearly there was a rhetoric to say, move to diesel, it's better for the environment, etc., and are understandably sceptical, what would your voice say to them, Quentin?
Okay, well, I remember when Gordon Brown in that 2000 supposedly green budget said we're going to cut the duty on sulfur diesel, and everybody converted to diesel from petrol. I mean, I think, you know, it was massive, the dash for diesel. But I remember saying and writing with Clarkson at the time, why are they doing this? You know, because it's wrong, and the Americans agreed with this. You know, what about the particulates in your towns and cities? So that really was bad political policy. And everybody sort of said at the time, no, this isn't good. And now we're reaping the benefits of so much diesel particulate pollution, which the Americans don't really have, because, you know, their passenger car fleet is broadly powered by petrol. So that was a political electoral sop. But this is different. You've got, you know, trusted voices like the RAC and like Fiat and like the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders saying, look, we have to do this. This isn't something coming from government right now. It's a bunch of people who have been making, driving, talking, and building electric cars and learning about them to say that this is the way the world is going. So we need to make it as easy as possible for you, fair consumers, to jump on this bandwagon.
Be fascinating to see what Mr. Mercedes, Mr. Benz, Mr. Ford et al. Would have actually said if they're looking down now and saying, oh, so that's what's happened to the old horseless carriage then in the 21st century.
Yeah, I mean, but Henry Ford was playing around with electric cars, you know, in the early days, and the electric cars were really one of the first cars. I mean, you used to have to buy petrol at a chemist. So having lead acid batteries in these old cars in the late 1800s, was the way ahead. It was only because of the electric starter and fuel stations that the combustion engine, you know, started to gain dominance. So they're not new. We just haven't been, you know, investing in and doing the research in them.
Quentin, people want to find out more about this Fiat campaign. Where would you point them?
Well, for the £3,000 discount on your 500e and 600e range, go to fiat.co.uk. And to find out more about electric cars, go to places like electrifying.com, Autocar, Autotrader, the RAC, Fair Charge. There's lots of information out there which tells you about electric cars. And don't read the stuff on social media and believe it's true. Talk to someone who has owned an electric car. They will give you the unvarnished truth.
Unless, of course, it's social media which features your good self, Quentin, which brings us around to the last question. Where can people locate your good self out in there in the wonderful world of cyberspace?
So we've got a campaign called Fair Charge, and it's faircharge.co.uk. That's our website. I'm on quentinwilson.co.uk as well.
Quentin, always a delight. Hopefully we'll speak again in the very near future. Meanwhile, happy driving.
Pleasure, Alex. Thanks.